Okay, good morning, Rabbi. So we've arrived at Siman Tov Resh Pei Vov. A small introduction to the first Seif. This Siman looks at the halachas of Tanis Esther. There's a little cross lines with something that was touched upon in Hilchas Tanis. In Siman Tov Kuf Ayin Gimel, we spoke about the general rule that Botla Megillas Tanis. Megillas Tanis was nisbatil, it was cancelled, it was nullified, which means there was a list of days given in Megillas Tanis, which are sort of semi-festive days, on which the rule is that it is forbidden to fix a tarnis. A list of festive days on which there's no tarnis. And it was also said over there that those days, not only do you not fix a tarnis on those days, but also you don't fix a tarnis on the day before and the day after. Their festive nature sort of spreads over to the day before and the day after. Now we learnt over there that Botla Megillas Tarnis, all those days, that was all cancelled out, so all those days that are listed there, you can have a tarnis, no problem. An exception was mentioned over there, which is one of the days listed in Megillas Tanis, two of the days, is Chanukah and Purim. They're also on that list. Now, as far as Chanukah and Purim are concerned, Megillas Tanis was not nullified as far as they're concerned. The Isser of Tanis still remains on Chanukah and on Purim. Now, having said this, there's also a rule said over there that you don't make a Tanis lifnehem and you don't make a Tanis la'achrehem. The Tanis not before and not after. So what needs to be discussed over here before we can come to Tanis Esther is one allowed to have a Tanis the day before Purim? Is the rule that when we say Megillas Tanis was Botla but not regarding Chanukah and Purim, how does that apply to the day before and the day after? So on that the Shulchan Aruch comes and tells us that B'Chanukah u'Purim it is actually absolutely permitted to have a fast on the day before and on the day after, because although we said Chanukah and Purim are an exception to the general rule, and as far as they are concerned, it was not nisbatil, but that only applies to the Chanukah and the Purim itself. But as regards the day before and the day after, Chanukah and Purim are no different to any other day in Megillas Tanis, and its halachas were nisbatil, and therefore a Tanis is allowed the day before Chanukah, the day after Chanukah, the day before Purim, and the day after Purim.
You're saying that when Megillas Tanis was enforced, there was no Tanis Esther?
According to the Shulchan Aruch's approach, yeah. We'll see there's another approach in which the Mishnah Berurah is sort of Merami's too. And the Mishnah Berurah mentions that some disagree, the opinion of the Bach, based upon some other Rishonim, who maintain that in fact, no, the setup is not as we've described it now. And in fact, As far as Chanukah and Purim are concerned, in essence, the halachas of Megillas Tanis still remain, and therefore, in essence, there's a prohibition of Tanis before, there's a prohibition of Tanis after, and Tanis Esther itself is a sort of special takana miyuchede, it's a special takana that Chazal instituted despite the general rules for a particular certain individual reason which applies only to Tanis Esther itself and not to anything else. And according to this approach, a Tanis is forbidden before and after Chanukah and Purim, with the exception of Tanis Esther. So you can't fast on Erev Chanukah, you can't fast on the day after Chanukah. And Mishnah Berurah says, lechatchila, one should take this opinion into account. Yeah, 100%. And even another practical thing Mishnah Berurah suggests, we will probably mention somewhere along the line, that there's a minhag of some Yechidim to have a Tanis on Erev Rosh Chodesh. Erev Rosh Chodesh Yom Kippur Katan, and some people actually fast. It's a day of extra sort of slicha tshuva. Some people fast on Erev Rosh Chodesh, so it was a minhag of some. What happens? Erev Rosh Chodesh Teves. Erev Rosh Chodesh Teves falls always in the middle of Chanukah, so you can't fast. So there was a minhag of some to bring the fast earlier to Erev Chanukah. So Mishnah Berurah says, you know, people who have that minhag, we're not going to tell them to change their minhag, but if you don't have that minhag, don't take it on the Chatchil, because it's itself is still questionable. Very nice, you've moved it off from Chanukah, but you've moved it to Erev Chanukah, which is also questionable whether a fast is permitted at that time or not. Moving on to Seif Beis. Mis'anim b'yud gimel ba'adar. We fast on the 13th of Adar. The reason for this fast is because this was the day when Mordechai and Esther fought against the enemies of the Jewish people at that time. And it was a special day also of davening and asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for mercy. And we find that when the Am Yisrael fought against Amalek in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, it's recorded in Chazal that they fasted on that day, in order that Hashem should have rachmim on them, and certainly they did the same in the times of Mordechai and Esther as well. And in order to remember that fast, we too fast on the day before Purim, on Yud Gimel Adar. Mishmaru also mentions that the Ma'aril actually learnt somewhat less on this day, because it's a day which is a very busy day, getting ready the Tzor Kei Purim. There's a lot of things to do to make sure you have in the supplies for Mishlach Monas and for the Su'udah. So actual wording is that the Ma'aril didn't say his shir, didn't say his behaloch, didn't say his shir. Mishmur explains that actually to get involved in sort of learning it was a sort of yeshiva type learning without any fixed amount of time, how long it would carry on for, or how it didn't have a fixed gevul. So that type of learning has to be careful to also leave time for the Tzor Kei Purim. It doesn't come to the exclusion of having a regular fixed shir, which has got a time when it starts and a time when it finishes. And you'll certainly have plenty of time left in the day to also be involved in the Tzor Kei Purim. Such a shir shouldn't be cancelled. The Imchal Purim be'echad b'Shabbos. Now, if Purim happens to fall on a Sunday, like it does this year, madimin leis anes b'im chamishi, then we bring the fast earlier to a Thursday, even though in essence it is permitted to fast on Erev Shabbos, like we even sometimes do. We had it, I think, this year on Asar B'Teves. Yeah, it's the only one that can actually fall on that day. So you could have said to yourself, we're going to bring the Tanis Esther earlier, let's bring it early to a Friday. Friday is allowed to fast on a Friday. But the Mishmur explains that we prefer to avoid having a fast on a Friday because the Torah of the fast and the extra tefillahs do somewhat interfere with the Shabbos preparation. And therefore, we only have a fast on a Friday when it fell on a Friday. But if we're anyway moving the fast earlier, then we move it earlier to a Thursday. Thursday, Ramah. The Tanis zeh einoi choiva. Now, this Tanis is not an obligation in the same sense that the other fasts are an obligation. The other fasts, obviously, I'm not talking about Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av, but even the other fasts have a mention in Divrei Kabbalah, have a mention in the Nevi'im. The Tanis Esther doesn't have any such mention in the Nevi'im. It's a minhag of Am Yisrael. It's obviously a minhag that has to be kept, but it isn't obligatory in the same sense. And therefore, in times of tzorech, one can be, in times of need, one can be more lenient about this fast. For example, ladies who are pregnant or nursing, it was mentioned elsewhere in the Ramah that on a regular fast, although the truth is that in essence, even all the regular fasts, in essence, they're not obligatory for pregnant ladies and nursing ladies. Nevertheless, there was a minhag that pregnant ladies and nursing ladies also fasted.
With the exclusion of
Yom Kippur. Yeah, I'm sorry. Absolutely clear, yes, 100%. And even with the exclusion of Tishba. But at the moment I'm discussing the other fasts. Mm-hmm. Asar B'Teves, Shavasar B'Tammuz, and Tzom Gedalia. So those fasts, in essence, they're not obligatory for pregnant ladies and nursing ladies. Nevertheless, there are more mentioned in Minhag that, unless it's particularly difficult for them, they should still fast. However, having said all that background, in Tanis Esther, it's not like that. Tanis Esther is more lenient, and they don't need to fast at all. Or likewise, one can be lenient for somebody who is a chole, somebody who is ill. Or Hashulchan actually questions this line of the Ramah because it's difficult to understand. Because in all fasts, again, on all of the more lenient fasts, not Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av, but in the other fasts, the fast is not incumbent upon a chole. There's no takana of a fast for a chole. By a chole, we mean somebody who is not just not feeling so great, but he's ill. Ill in the sense that he has to lie in bed. Yeah, not sakana, no sakana, but he's ill, properly ill. So it's difficult to understand what the Ramah wants with this over here. But the chiddush which it does lie here is in the coming line. V'afilu rak koya ve'einayim, even people who simply have a pain in their eyes, i.e., this is what we would consider a sort of minor ailment. He's not ill. He doesn't have to lie in bed because he's ill. He's in pain, something troubling him, something bothering him. He's got an ailment, a minor ailment. She'im mitztarim, if they're very bothered by it, lo yis'anu, they do not need to fast. V'yifru acharkach, and they should pay back the fast afterwards. Mishmur explains that this requirement to pay back the fast afterwards, that applies only to this last case of the people who have the minor ailment. Doesn't apply to the pregnant women and nursing women, because for them the fast was never instituted in the first place. Somebody's got a minor ailment, we're just giving him a sort of dispensation. Okay, we'll let you off, but you should pay back the fast on another occasion. And the reason why the paying back helps is because, in essence, this fast was never really fixed for any particular day. As we've said in the first place, the entire thing is a minhag, and anywhere sort of in the region of Purim is, in essence, a good enough time to fulfill this fast, to have this fast. So if you didn't have it on Erev Purim, you could have it another day somewhere in Adar. So there is an idea of paying it back. Having said these leniencies, Avol Shar Briim, continues the Ramah, Shar Briim, other healthy people, Lo Yifrushu Min HaTzibur, should not separate from the community. One shouldn't be quick to just say, oh, well, it's just a minhag and I'm not going to bother. No, Chas V'Shalom, without any particular reason for a dispensation, one should keep this up. V'im Chal Purim B'yom Rishon, and if Purim falls on a Sunday, like it does this year, Shemist Anim B'yom Chamishi Shelefonov, when we then bring the fast earlier to the Thursday, so it's what we call it soim, which is nitche, where its halachas are somewhat more lenient. For cholbei bris milah, and somebody has a bris milah on that day, muta lechol al hamilah, it is permitted to have a su'udas bris milah and to eat. Olamacho biyom shishi, and on the Friday yis anu ha'oichlim, the people who ate at that su'udas bris will pay back the fast. Even though, as we said, ideally we don't like a fast on a Friday, but here just for a few yichidim, we allow it. Don't want to fix the fast for the entire tzibur on that day for the yechidim, we do allow it. The Mishmura mentions an opinion who disagrees with the Ramad's position and says that no, we shouldn't be lenient like this to start allowing everybody to just come and eat at this Suda's Bris. Rather, better practice is to fast and to have the Suda's Bris at night. Nevertheless, even according to the more lenient, to the more stringent opinion, the actual people who are the kohen of the Bris, the mother, the father, the sanduk, the people who are directly involved in the bris, they do not need to fast from after the bris, because the day of a bris is considered like their private yomtiv, and they don't have to fast. But as far as allowing other people to come and join in the suda, this stringent opinion says that one should not do so, rather one should have the suda at night. The bottom line, the Mishnah Berurah does say that somebody who wishes to be lenient in accordance with the Ramah's ruling and allow everybody to eat may do so. Seif Gimel. Yesh mis'anim shloisha yomim. There are people who fast in Chodesh Adar after Purim for 3 days. Zeichel Tanis Esther, in memory of the actual Tanis of Esther Hamalka, who we know in the Purim story, she and the people of Shushan fasted for 3 days before she entered Achashverosh's private chamber. Now, Mishmur says it doesn't mean that we fast 3 days on the trot. That's probably beyond our koiches nowadays. What it means is that there were people who would fast a sheni chamishi b'sheni after Purim. Nevertheless, Aruch HaShulchan mentions that he's never heard of anybody doing this nowadays, presumably because our koiches are not the same as people had once upon a time, and we don't go for extra fasts when there's no pressing reason. Mishmur also mentions over here the well-known halacha, Mishnichnas Adar Marbin B'Simcha. And one practical ramification of this is that somebody who has some dealings with a non-Jew and he has to go to be judged in some sort of court should push it off till Chodesh Adar, since it's considered a good time. Another point that Mishnah Berurah mentions over here is there is a concept of a tzibur accepting upon themselves a day of celebration like Purim, when there's been some particular tzara on the community and they've been saved. There's an idea that community can accept upon themselves a day of celebration every year, and they're going to keep it in Halal Vaidot to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the nace which happened to them. And even a Yochid who had experienced something can also accept upon himself and his family to keep a day as a day of celebration. One very famous case is the Tosfos Yom Tov. Tosfos Yom Tov, Rabbi Yom Tov Lipman Heller, he was imprisoned by the authorities and he was about to be executed, because they have some sort of trumped up charge against him, and eventually it was sort of nace, and they managed to save him and to get him out, and he accepted the particular day as a yom tov for him and his family for coming dairus.
So he chose it in Adar?
No, it doesn't have to be Dafke in Adar. Punkt. Because it's called a Purim. This concept is called a Purim. So Purim of a Yochid, or a Purim of a community, and that's why it's mentioned over here, although in essence there's The Shaykhus is more the general concept that, you know, when a Kodesh Baruch Hu saved us from some threatening situation, we fix a day of halal voida. Okay, let's move on next. Simon Tov Reish Pei Zayin. Chiyuv Kriyas HaMegillah, the obligation of reading the Megillah. Chayav Odom Likriyas HaMegillah Balayla V'lachso Lishnoi Sivar Yom. The Megillah needs to be read twice. A person is obligated to read the Megillah once at night and then once again to repeat it during the day. The reason we have to repeat it is just like in the times of Mordechai and Esther, Am Yisrael Davon to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, both at day and at night, ongoing, constant davening. So to remember their tzara and to remember the Neis and HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us, we also repeat the Halal V'Hoidah, the thanksgiving that we give to HaKadosh Baruch Hu by reading the Megillah. We repeat it and both by day and by night. Yeah, in essence, it's not, although we do it like along with the Tefillah, it's not that we're connected to the Tefillah.
Three times a day, but when this happened, we didn't daven even one time a day.
True. There was no fixed Tefillah at that time. Yeah.
It was a very special
special takon. So the Megillah of the night can be read the entire night. So that means from Tzeis HaKechovim up until Amot HaShachar. So although maybe normally we would do it at the beginning of the night, if for some reason somebody didn't do it then, it can be done the entire night up until Amot HaShachar. But after that, after Amot HaShachar, it is already considered halachically day. It's too late for the nighttime Megillah and you have lost the opportunity. V'shal Yom, the reading of the day, Zmano Kol HaYom, can be done the entire day, Mehonit Zachamo, from sunrise ad Sof HaYom, until the end of the day. But for Imkirah Misha'ala Amot HaShachar, if one read it from slightly earlier, from the time of Amot HaShachar, which is a little bit before Neitz, that too is good enough, but the Evid, Yot, someone has fulfilled one's obligation. Because we know this general concept, the mitzvahs that are to be done during the day are generally only done from Hanitza Chamo, because if we would allow from Amot HaShachar, people might come to confusion and they might do it a little bit too early and end up doing the mitzvah when it's still really nighttime. So Chazal pushed off the mitzvah a little and they said, no, only do the mitzvah from Hanitza Chamo. Nevertheless, halachically, in essence, from Amot HaShachar, the day has begun, it's day, and if one did the mitzvah then, one has fulfilled the chiyuv. And even a little further, if one somebody has some difficulty, why for some reason he cannot read it from Hanitza Chamo, he has to go somewhere, he's going to be taken from another activity, if there's no other choice, one may read the Megillah, even Lechatchila, from Amot HaShachar and onwards. Seif Beis. Mevatlim Talmud Torah Lishmoya Mikra Megillah. One stops Talmud Torah in order to hear the Megillah. The Mishmur explains that not just in order to hear the Megillah, of course you stop learning in order to listen to the Megillah, you stop learning in order to fulfill any mitzvah. But the chiddush over here is, we're going to see later on, that the ideal way to read the Megillah is to read the Megillah in a large public setting. It means if we'll take the sort of old-fashioned example of a little shtetl or a small town that's got one big central shul, that is where the Megillah should be read, and that is where you should hear the Megillah, in the public shul along with everybody else. So even if you have a group of people who are learning together as a group, even if it's a large group, but it is at the end of the day, it is a private setting. They're learning together in a house, in their own private place, whatever it might be. They should stop their learning. Not only should they stop their learning to read, but then they could stop their learning and just read it together where they are in their private setting. No, they should stop their learning and go to read the Megillah in the public shul, so as to fulfill the mitzvah of Megillah in its most ideal way. Mishmur adds that nevertheless, having said this, although we're saying that Megillah should be read in a large public setting, we do not mean to say that every single shul in the town, in a town where there's many shuls, everybody has to leave their smaller shul to go to the largest shul in the town. That's not what we're saying. If you daven in a certain regular shul, which is a little smaller than the next door shul, we're not saying that everybody has to go to the larger shul for Kriyas HaMegillah. What we are saying is that one should ideally join in hearing the Megillah in a public setting as opposed to a private setting. So if somebody has some sort of private minion in a house or something where you sort of have to be invited to come there, that is not an ideal place to hear the Megillah. So if there's some tzorech, choyle, something like that, obviously one can do it, but the ideal place to hear the Megillah is in a public shul, and it, as we've said, it's to the extent that one is even the vatal Torah to do so. So coming back to those lomdim learning privately in their house, even though it takes them extra time to leave where they are, to go to the public shul, and possibly to wait there until the entire tzibur gather, that is what they should do, even though it results in loss of their Torah learning. Kavachayme, going back to the words of the Shulchan Aruch now, all the more so, Kavachayme, Lishar mitzvahs, Shal Torah, all the more so, all other mitzvahs, which are of less weight than Talmud Torah, Shekulam nitchim ne mikra Megillah, they're all pushed aside in order to read the Megillah in its ideal manner. Ve'en l'chadova shenitchim mikra Megillah v'padav, and in fact, there is nothing which pushes aside this reading the Megillah in its ideal manner, except for chutz me'meiz mitzvah she'in lo koivrim, except for a meiz mitzvah who does not have anybody to bury him. I'll skip for a second the two words of the Ramah. Except for a meiz mitzvah who does not have anybody to bury him, shapegeh boy, somebody who finds himself in this situation, sees a meiz mitzvah lying there with nobody to bury him, koivrei techila, then he gives that mitzvah precedence, he buries him first, va'achar kach kareh, and afterwards he reads the Megillah. So even though that's going to result in him reading the Megillah in a non-ideal manner, he's going to miss that big minyan in the public shul, and he's going to read it privately afterwards. Nevertheless, that's what he should do. Meiz mitzvah takes precedence over this idea of reading the Megillah in its ideal manner. Now the wording of the Shulchan Aruch implies that we are talking about a meiz mitzvah, a real, real meiz mitzvah, a classic meiz mitzvah, there's nobody to bury him, and then you push aside the ideal kriyas ha-megillah in order to bury him. The Ramah adds in two words, if we'll read over that sentence again, she'ein lo kovrim, a meiz mitzvah who does not have people to bury him, kedei tzorkoi, enough to be mechabit him properly. So according to the Ramah, even if the situation is there are people to bury this meiz, no, those people have already heard the Megillah or whatever, there's people to bury this meiz, you're on the way to your public Megillah reading, you see this person who's got a very small levaya and is not appropriate, is not suitable, is not getting the covet which he deserves, there too one would push off the opportunity of fulfilling Kriyas HaMegillah in its ideal manner in that public setting in order to give this person the covet that he deserves. The Ma'aseh of the Mishnah Berurah brings a number of Achronim who side with the Shulchan Aruch's ruling that one should only push off Kriyas HaMegillah for the sake of a real, true Meis Mitzvah. Let's continue with the Ramah. V'chol de lo mari ela b'de'ikus shahus la'aseh shteyem. Now this entire discussion, we're talking about that both of the mitzvahs are going to get done. We're not talking about actually pushing aside completely either of the mitzvahs. Both of the mitzvahs are going to get done. The entire issue is whether the Megillah is going to be read in its ideal fashion or not. That's all. But besides for that, everything else is going to be done. Both of the mitzvahs will be done. Whether you do Megillah first, whether you do the other mitzvah first, all the mitzvahs will be done. The only thing that might happen is that the Megillah might not be read in its proper way. Avlim ef shalas is shtem. If you have a mitzvah that's not going to get done, it is impossible to do both. Then the rules change. In shum mitzvah d'oraisa, there is no biblical mitzvah nitzchus which is pushed aside b'pnei mikra Megillah because of reading the Megillah. At the end of the day, when push comes to shove, as they say, the Megillah is not a d'oraisa mitzvah, and other mitzvahs face the d'oraisa mitzvah. If it's a choice between A or B, then the d'oraisa mitzvah is done and the Megillah is pushed aside. However, the Mishmur mentions a number of Achronim who quite amazingly disagree with this, and they say no, even if the other mitzvah is going to be pushed aside, the Deraita mitzvah is going to be pushed aside, it's not going to be done. The only mitzvah that's going to get done is the Mikra Megillah. Nevertheless, one reads the Megillah and one pushes aside the Deraita mitzvah. Because this goes into the concept that Chazal have the Koyach to institute that their mitzvahs should be done, or their Gezeirah should be kept, whatever it is, when it results in pushing aside a d'oraisa mitzvah only b'shev va'al ta'aseh, not actually actively contravening Torah law, we're just sitting back and non-actively doing something. So we're not going to be able to fulfill mitzvah X, okay, so we didn't do it, but we did the Megillah instead. And likewise, also the same thing applies the other way around, the last line of the Ramah, v'had the meis mitzvah koidim, also when we said the idea that the meis mitzvah comes first, haynu dafka, that too is only b'de'ef shelo l'kora acharkach, when we have a situation where it's possible to read the Megillah afterwards. That too was discussing both of the mitzvahs are going to get done. You've met the meis mitzvah on the way, so we said the meis mitzvah comes first, and you do the Megillah afterwards. But what we mean is, there's enough time in the day to read the Megillah as well, after dealing with the Meiz Mitzvah. If there's not enough time in the days, then you can do the other way around. Why? Because ultimately, the Meiz Mitzvah can still be buried later on. So you'll come back afterwards and you'll bury him. But the Megillah can't be done later on. Nevertheless, the Mishnah Berurah quotes Achronim who disagree with this, and his maskana seems to be that, in fact, no. The Meiz Mitzvah is so important that even just the pushing it off for a few hours should not be done. Rather, one should deal with the Meis Mitzvah, and the Megillah indeed will be pushed aside in this case. Okay, we'll stop here. Shkoyach.